This time on Poll Hub, Joe Biden has made voting rights his main priority this week. And while some say it's too little too late, most Democrats are saying it's about time. What's striking about all this, though, is that a majority of Americans approve of nearly every component of all the different bills being considered. So why are the prospects of anything at all regarding voting rights passing in the Senate so uncertain? Then, Omicron is just starting to recede in places that it hit hard first, New York City, the UK, but it's still spreading and raging across most of the US, and it has put many Americans in an even more pessimistic place than they were last year, or the year before that. We are looking at the data. Finally, Lee would like to talk about one of his favorite things for his fun fact segment this week, cookies. Who's gonna break it to him that we're not talking about those kind of cookies?
I bought a bag of Oreos, so I'm ready to dunk them.
Oh, well, in that case, let's get to it. And hi, everybody. Welcome to Poll Hub. I'm J.D. Dapper.
I'm Barbara Carvalho.
And I'm Lee Marengoff.
Voting rights is the topic du jour in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital this week. Joe Biden went to Georgia to make it a priority, to kind of drive the news agenda on this. But nothing's really changed in terms of the prospects of any of these voting rights bills that have been floating around that a majority of Democrats, in fact, all the Democrats in the Senate support, you know, several of these bills, but you got to get 60 to get overcome the filibuster and no Republicans support it. And so it doesn't look like there's any chance of these passing. So we wanted to look at some of the polling around this about what Americans think of this. So we know what the Democrats and Republicans think in Congress. We know what Joe Biden thinks. And what struck me when looking at these numbers, including some new numbers this week from some polling organizations, is that Americans are largely on board, but that doesn't seem to be influencing this. And I wonder if that's partly because when it comes to COVID and the economy, that's what people are really thinking about a lot more than they are about voting rights. Too simple? Is that not what the data shows? Where are we with this?
No, I think that's a very good way of characterizing it. I don't think that voting rights and voting access and concerns about fraud or suppression are not important to Americans. They're very important to Americans. But right now, we're in the middle of January, in the midst of a surge in the coronavirus, and worried very much about the economy. So I don't think it's about what's important, but more about what is the priority right now.
But Barb, I mean, even if we weren't in the middle of COVID, I mean, Congress would not be exactly stepping up to the plate on this because of the huge party divisions. So as far as public opinion is concerned.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I meant was that in terms of being top of mind of what Americans are worried about right now, yes, Congress is taking it up. But it's I don't think it's, you know, kind of front of mind for a lot of people at this point.
Which to me is, you know, wake me up when it's over. But, you know, I sort of play the historian on our trio here. And, you know, I thought not that I thought this, but one would think that this was an issue that we sort of put to bed in the 60s. I mean, a lot of people have heard of things like the Voting Rights Act. And if you couple that with sort of the ethos of our nation about people having a right to vote, this is really just, you know, reeks of kind of like the sleeping giant of discrimination that's still very much alive and well in our country.
Well, I think there's a bit of a disconnect between public opinion and Washington. Surprise!
Yeah, welcome to America.
Yeah, you know, that's a really revolutionary comment on my part. But the reason it's very applicable in this instance is because all the polling, and there have been a number of polls out this week and certainly in the past, and we've been, you know, tracking this issue of, you know, trust in elections and whether they're fair and who thinks they're, you know, if they're not fair, who do they, you know, tend to, who do they lean towards? And that kind of just goes, you know, that fluctuates depending upon who's in power. But on the voting rights act, I think what was very interesting is not only Jay, that you mentioned that there's majority support on most of these issues, but if we were polling Americans, we would actually not, you know, we'd be over 60% on many of these. One being, you know, making Election Day a federal holiday. 61% of Americans support that. Expanding access to early voting. 65% support that. Making it, and to your point, Lee, making it illegal to prevent someone from registering to vote. 62% of Americans, you know, either strongly or somewhat support that. And again, gerrymandering, the issue of actually manipulating electoral districts to give an advantage to either Democrats or Republicans with which legislatures, you know, in, you know, across the country, state legislatures are very fond of doing. You know, 64% of Americans think that we should have congressional districts that, you know, look more like, you know, figures we've used in geometry rather than something we may find in a science lab. So I think there's, you know, there's really, you know, strong support for many of these issues. And even 63% of Americans say that they support requiring states with a history of voting rights violations in the past 25 years be required to first get permission from the Justice Department before making any changes to voting practices, which is the voting rights, you know, act that you were talking about that was, you know, debated and overturned.
So I wonder, part of the problem, though, and this comes from a question that they asked in this Politico Morning Consult poll. I wonder if part of the problem is that there is so much in these bills. There's so many things. And yeah, you break down the components and you're seeing these 60% plus approval ratings. But one of the questions they asked is, which of these do you think should be a top priority for the U.S. to Congress to pass, if any? So reforming Congress's role in the counting the electoral college votes, and we'll talk about that in a minute, 20%. Expanding voting right access in federal elections, 26%. Expanding oversight of states' changes to voting practices, 22%. The winner is none of these should be a priority for Congress. But that's only 32%. So you add up those other numbers, you go, well, look, 60 plus percent say that one of these should be a priority, but they split on what the priority should be. I wonder if part of that is what is driving these problems, is that the public supports, but it's not seen as a priority in Washington because there's not a single thing that everybody's gotten behind. Fair?
Well, I think there's all, I think that also the debate in Congress has been very partisan. And when we look at a lot of these issues, we do see a partisan divide. I think the more that these questions focus on the right for everyone to be able to vote, I guess what you're saying, Jay, is it's the how we do that that people are worried. Certainly Democrats think the vote is being suppressed and Republicans think that there is a lot of fraud going on. One thing I found surprising is that the numbers in terms of trust, in terms of whether people think elections are fair, really hasn't changed. I mean, we do still get about 6 in 10 Americans believing that elections are fair. Now, obviously, it's rather concerning that we have such a large proportion of Americans who don't think so, because that is the basis of and the foundation of our democracy, but...
And a big partisan split on that one.
Exactly. But, you know, it's about how these issues get debated. And we've seen this over and over again as we look to how it gets discussed in the halls of Congress and in the media.
Yeah, and I would take up the mantle of sort of what I advocate in class, you know, that the media should be talking about the way things are and not necessarily just providing an equivalent interpretation. So the reality is that has been evidenced by court cases. First of all, this is an issue that has been going on for a while. It's not a new issue, but the reality is is that the evidence of fraud in the 2020 presidential election was probably the least occurrence that we've had in elections dating back a long time. It was an amazingly clean election as far as the reality is concerned.
That's what the Trump administration's own officials said.
Yes. And yes.
Well, and also the state by state court cases.
I know. So we have this fictional, I guess I always think of reality TV and not reality TV, because reality TV is not real. So we have this reality TV interpretation of fraud versus, voter suppression. And, one is real, the other is fiction. And, the voter suppression is something that, were it not something that I think advantaged the Democratic Party by, having same day, and we know early voting, same day registration, these are things that tend to be more prominent among Democrats. And were it not for that partisan division, I suspect, this would not be divided the way it is. However, it is divided along party lines, and we have this creation of voter fraud advanced by President Trump, picked up by the Republican Congress. And the footnote in this is, of course, that Donald Trump voted by mail, but that's probably, convenience rather than ideological.
Hey, before we move on, though, I did want to mention that this electoral count, because I think as we record this on Thursday, it looks like there is a bipartisan group of senators who are working on kind of a compromise, or something. I don't know if you want to call it a compromise, a different Voting Rights Act idea, and that is the Electoral Count Act, changing that. Remember, that's basically what happened that sparked the January 6th riots, or whatever we want to call it. We did that last episode. In that, the Senate, in a kind of a what is considered to be a pro forma act, approves the electors that come from each of the states, and the president is named. And this is an unclear reading, and there are Republicans and Democrats who are together in Washington right now, who are arguing that maybe this is something that can pass. I wanted to mention that only because that's probably something that's going to come up. And in these polls, 55% said, yes, definitely, or probably this should be done. This should be reformed. Only 20% said
it has to do with the vice president.
That the vice president should not have any role in deciding who the president is. It should be de facto that he says, this is what the Senate has. They have declared these electors to be approved. He is approved. We're done. 20% said no, but 25% don't have an opinion. So there's an educational, piece of this too, where I don't think most Americans know about this, probably because it's only come up in the last few days. But I think there's going to be a lot of attention on this as this podcast goes, out into people's podcasting apps. So I wanted to make note of these poll results on that.
And there may also be some workarounds attempted at the filibuster, which is what's keeping the these reforms from moving forward. And there's so there's always a wrinkle of procedure in the Senate if you dig far enough, and there may be some kind of very unusual twist of to get around some of the filibuster restrictions. I'm not sure that will take foot, but that could also happen. This is an active moment in Washington in terms of this issue.
Well, an issue that is very top of mind and a top priority for many Americans is the coronavirus and the surge that we have seen since really Thanksgiving and through the holidays of the Omicron variant. It's only now passing its peak in places where it started, particularly in this country, in New York City, in the UK. But for many parts of the U.S., the peak is still probably weeks away. There has been some polling. We were looking at an Axios Ipsos poll new out this week, which looked at opinions about how Americans feel about COVID right now. And one of the really, I don't know if it's surprising, because anecdotally, I think in conversation, we've had this sense that people are really tired and saying, oh my goodness, I can't believe, we're going through this again. But a majority of Americans are, in fact, pessimistic in this poll about when COVID is actually going to end. 52% said that they think that it'll be probably more than a year or perhaps never before things return to normal. So is there actually a new normal? Is that what we're looking at? You know, social distancing, masks, do we get beyond this in the new future, or are Americans right to be prepared that we're in it for the long haul?
I would just quickly insert on this. I think part of the COVID fatigue, first of all, is because it's been going on so long. But I think also in September, there was a sense that things might, you know, after the summer, come back to normal. And then all of a sudden the Delta, you know, wave appeared. Sort of derailed things to some degree again. And then December, January, although there was concern about the holiday spread, the numbers were going pretty good going into Thanksgiving. And then the Omicron, you know, that shows up. And that's someone at the CDC, a former director, said it's more like a flash flood rather than a wave because it's been just so transmissible.
One of the numbers that's in the poll that we're talking about here is this combined 52% of all respondents who say that it's either going to be a year or never before things get back to normal. And that's kind of, I think, where we've been in this is we've had these peaks. And at these peaks, there has been pessimism. I mean, we look at our poll from the first polls we did at the beginning of the pandemic, and we asked about how long, you know, people thought it would get back to normal. And at first, people were like, oh, it'll get back to normal real quick, you know, a couple weeks, couple months. And then by the summer and into the fall of that year, the first year, 2020, I think we recognized that maybe it wouldn't. And so those numbers began to expand. But it's never in the polling by Axios Ipsos, they've never had 52% say more than a year or never. And my sense is, and I may be glass half full here, which I tend to be, is that we're at the worst point. We are at the high watermark of this. And yes, it's absolutely natural for people to be the most pessimistic they've been because coming up on the third year of this, starting the third year of this, 90% of Americans now say that they've known somebody who's gotten COVID. Never been that way before. We're seeing people who are vaccinated and boosted getting COVID. So that raises all we had to do is get vaccinated and it solved it. Well, it didn't solve it. All we have to do is get boosted and it solved it. Well, it didn't solve it because solving it meant it going away. And I think where we are now is not yet to the point. Well, I think we're not to the point, which is the next shift, which is it's never going away, but we can live with it like we live with the cold or, you know, the flu or whatever it is. Yeah.
But this notion that it's mild and people, many people are, you know, thinking, well, you know, worst case, maybe I should even go out and get it and kind of like get it over with. Well, first of all, you can sort of get it again. And second of all, the word mild is for a lot of people somewhat of a misnomer. It may mean that you don't end up in the emergency room.
In the hospital.
Hospital, intubated, or that you end up passing away from this. But there's a lot of people feel pretty lousy when they have this mild form. So it's a little misleading when people just think that there's a comfort level in the common cold. For a lot of people, this is not the case, and the symptoms can last, and then it can return, and not to be the half-empty guy, but, it certainly has that element to it. So it's not pretty, and we're as eager as everybody else just to kind of get back to normalcy, which looked like it was going to be happening, and then got snatched up again.
Well, but I think it is a defining event, and I think that it has had an impact on behavior for many people. And as you point out, the transmissibility of the Omicron variant has changed people's perspective. Also in this poll, 3 in 4 Americans said that they feel that they are at great risk, or at least more risk of contracting the virus than they were for the earlier variants. So there is this sense, I think in the beginning, many people didn't know anybody who had it. They certainly didn't know anybody who died. And that has significantly changed. It's changed through Delta, which was on the, you know, through 2021, and Omicron has certainly brought COVID into many households. And right now, even when posed against the economy, the majority of Americans, although you know, more than 4 in 10 are concerned about how we keep moving on the economy and the impact of all this, but a majority do see COVID and the spread of this and the concern for the spread of this disease as the top priority and something that government should need to address.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, closing on this point, that there are two pathways. And there's a pathway among those who've been vaccinated and a pathway among those who haven't been vaccinated. Now, some people are either too young or don't have the opportunity because of prior condition to get vaccinated. That's a different group. There are people who voluntarily choose not to be vaccinated, and they're at much higher risk of all the problems that COVID provides. The hospitalizations are mostly among those who have not been vaccinated. I mean, there's kind of a clear message in here. It's been there for a while, and I don't know if there's been a big rush, not only to get vaccinated, but to go the full route, because the booster seems to be the one that really reduces the severity of this.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That's a good point, Lee, because the incidence of people getting boosted is much, much lower than even full vaccinations. And the studies have shown, and the experiences that people have had have shown, that you almost get mild symptoms. I think we could all disagree on what mild means if you are boosted. So this is going to be a continuing discussion. The CEO of Pfizer, you know, also said the fourth booster, you know, focused on Omicron, is likely to be available end of March. So it's probably something that will be ongoing, as you pointed out, Jay. Where we get our flu shot or next variant booster on an annual basis. But
shall we end on a happier note?
I think so.
Yes. Yes.
You brought Oreos, Lee. So let's chop the chip. Okay.
Well, if you look at my cupboard at home, you will find, you know, a vast array of mostly eaten boxes of cookies, because I am a cookie. I'm not a cookie.
You're a cookie monster.
I'm a cookie monster. Not in the Sesame Street sense, but in here. Well, I guess that character likes the cookies also. So I would also. However, I've been told and learned over the years that there's a internet use of the word cookies, which for the life of me, I have no idea why that is. But the national polls have periodically measured this. It was run by Lewis Harris in 1997 among those who use the internet, which was at that point 81% of the people in the national audience that responded that were asked this question. 28 had heard of the use of the word cookies in reference to the internet, not in terms of your dessert. But 72% have not.
Had not. This is back in 1997, and we know the first web browsers, were around 1995. So this is kind of early, and certainly before the little pop-ups we get now when we go to any website, which is, you know, asking to be able to track your behavior.
Now, you've explained this to me in the past, but it hasn't stuck. I know that I do see, you know, cookies existing on everybody's computer screen. They will announce the arrival of these, and that this particular site may employ those. I think it's okay. I have no basis to think not.
I don't know about that.
Not very caloric. I know that.
You want to chime in here, Jay? I think it's very caloric for your computer.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say so why is it called a cookie? So, and before I looked it up, before we decided to do this segment, I always just assumed because cookies in the web are kind of like crumbs.
That's me crumbs, too.
Cookie trail, and they're not.
Why would the web be a cookie trail? I don't know.
The cookies that are dropped on basically onto you, your computer, your whatever, your email, whatever it is, the cookie is dropped to give back to data marketers, people who want your information, to give them back your data. And so every time you go to a page, every time you do something, that cookie basically sends a signal back to them. So it's like leaving crumbs across all of your web experiences where they can monitor you. Okay. Anyway.
This is such revelation. So it's not like Halloween when you go to a house and then the person gives you a cookie crumb or something into your bag.
No. Or breadcrumbs, you know, where you need to find your way back home on Halloween.
So the origin of the term, according to Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt or a crumb of cookie. The term cookie was coined by web browser programmer Lou Montulli. It was derived from the term magic cookie, which is a packet of data that a program receives and sends back unchanged. It's used in Unix programming. Unix is the underpinning of everything except for Windows that we do in the world of computers. So there you go. That's where the cookie comes from, and that's how the cookie crumbles. That'll do it for this edition of Poll Hub. Poll Hub is a production of the Marist Poll at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Mary Griffith is our executive producer, Casey Schaff is our production supervisor, and the Poll Hub team includes Ashley Marcinik and Marcello Bettman, and for the first time ever, producing this podcast, Athan Hollis. Good work, Athan. If you enjoy Poll Hub, please consider leaving a review. Positive reviews help other like-minded listeners find us. If you want to learn more about polling and survey science, check out the Marist Poll Academy. It's our free online learning portal. And if you have questions, tweet them right at us, at Marist Poll. Finally, wherever you listen to Poll Hub, there is a subscribe button. Click it, and the latest episode will be ready for you in your podcasting app of choice as soon as it is released. See you next time.